Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Whew. It is hot in here.
Yeah.
No, quite literally. Yeah. It is sweltering.
Yeah. No jumpers allowed in here from now on, I think.
I'm really regretting wearing this jumper. Like, it's about minus five. There's an issue with the air conditioning, and if history of this building tells me anything, it generally means the colder it is outside, the warmer it is inside. And we're getting set. I've been reading online. It's going to be very bad over the coming weeks.
Yeah, it is.
It's going to get very cold, so I'm a bit worried if this air conditioning doesn't improve. Joe Malloy may not turn up for work.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to put up with this nonsense in
TV, TV star now, isn't he? Yeah. You know, that's the thing. He doesn't need to bother with us.
You don't even get the makeup that he's provided with. So literally, if you tune in online, you can just see the sweat pouring out of us. It's a bit of a nightmare. So this Arsenal thing could be quite fun over the next hour or so.
I know. It'd be a good watch. We can't get it in front of us at the moment, but if we can see what happens, I suppose. It's just, it is amazing. You said before, someone said, is this like peak Arsenal? It is. You said before, it's just, it's incredible the way they go about it in the game that... You know, see it through. Even if you're not spectacular, even if you don't play to your best, just get the defence right, get the structure of the side right, and just see the game through professionally. And no, it's been a disaster for them tonight up to now.
You can read maybe too much into a first half performance like that, but it does feed into something that seems to maybe develop at Arsenal over the last couple of years, and they've just scored.
There you go.
I think they're fine. I think everything at Arsenal is going to be just fine. But there does seem to be more of a division at Arsenal over the last 18 months or so between the first 11 and everybody else. So rather than Chambers and Holding going out tonight thinking, if we play well, we can go and we can start in the cup final. Actually, Wenger has very much nailed his colours to the mast in terms of what his first 11 is, regardless of whether they're playing well enough.
Yeah, that's the way it seems, isn't it, as well? I think it's Kolasinac actually scored for us. But it's... He's a funny one. He seems to make his mind up on players as well. He just mentioned Kolasinac there. He started the season, looked good. All of a sudden then, he doesn't fancy him. And to be fair, I have probably seen this in football quite a lot, actually, where a manager, whether it would be in training or what's happened on a match day, they just seem to just change their mind, and they'll change their mind or their opinion of a player very quickly, given that he's just come into the club. But Wenger, you would imagine, he'll have his 11 in his mind for the weekend, and that will not change regardless of form. That's the way it seems to be, yeah.
Yeah, so the League Cup final Sunday, that is underway. I think it's 4:30 at Wembley. Just after 2:00, myself and Kev will be at Old Trafford for Manchester United against Chelsea. Quite a few texts coming in, 53106. If you know the answer to Kev's conundrum. It's the sort of thing I thought JP would have put a bit of work into, and we'd have a little sting. We could have made it a weekly event. Could have been something exciting on a Thursday night, try and keep people to stick with us. You know the way this radio thing works, JP? No. Give us the conundrum again.
Yeah.
The question.
Only player, who is the only player to have played in all four professional divisions in England in one calendar year?
Is it Tony Cotty?
No.
Asks Ivan.
No, it is not Tony Cotty.
Next, you see... I hope it's not Tony Cotty, because the next text says, I think the answer to Kev Caesar might be Tony Cotty. I know Steve Finnan has done it also, but not in the 1 year. Cotty did it, I think, at the back end of his career. Cheers from Colm.
Did he? Well, I was.
You better be right with your answer this question.
Well, the answer is definitely right. I was informed earlier on that he is the only person to have done it, yeah.
Okay, I believe you. Get your guesses in, 53106. There is no prize on offer to the winner, unfortunately. So Paul Pogba, we were chatting a little bit earlier. God, I love Paul Pogba. We get to talk about Paul Pogba endlessly.
You must be sick of it now, honest to God.
Whew, he's in, he's out. We feel a bit sorry for him.
So we're gonna rock up at Old Trafford on Sunday, and can you imagine the first question or we're waiting for? And Pogba starts.
Pogba doesn't start. Does it mean he's back in? Firstly, McTominay.
Yeah.
That is a statement from Jose Mourinho. In a game of that importance, to start him ahead of Paul Pogba. Yeah. It means Mourinho feels that he's in a strong enough position to make a statement like that. Is he making it in the expectation he'll get a response from Pogba, or is he making that decision with the feeling that actually this is going to come to a natural end pretty soon?
Yeah, I mean, I was reading a report today when the suggestion was, I think it was actually in the Indo that I'd read it, it was a lot of the Spanish journals, why is Pogba not starting? Who's this guy, Scott McTominay? Who's this fella? They'd never even heard of him, a lot of the journals. I don't know. In answer to what you're asking there, I don't think he's looking for a response. I think there's definitely a reason. There's usually a reason behind everything that Mourinho does. Now,
It's rarely just to give a player a kick up the backside.
No, it rarely is. It really is that. I mean, there was a suggestion as well. There'd been a talk about his confidence certainly would be knocked by this. I mean, John was talking about it earlier on, wasn't he? Saying, look, that is one of the greatest things about Paul Pogba is his confidence, total self confident. It doesn't seem to anything would knock him. So Mourinho, in doing this, you do feel as though that something is around the corner. Yeah, you do.
So John was maybe softening his stance a little bit on Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
Certainly hasn't changed his feeling that the role, the complete midfielder that Jose Mourinho talks about, that isn't Paul Pogba. But yeah, maybe there is a different role from in the team if you can keep his confidence levels high. Here is what another legendary Irish midfielder thinks. Roy Keane was on ITV last night.
Pogba's a really good player. He's under lots of pressure at the moment, a lot of speculation about him, left out tonight. You'd still have Pogba in your starting 11. I look at Pogba off the field. He seems to have a big personality, whether it be social media, the cars he drives, his haircut. He needs to bring all that onto the football pitch. But not just, Man United's problems aren't just with Pogba. Lukaku's got to do better. Sanchez, I know he's new to the club. He's got to do better. They obviously need to reinvest in some defenders. So you can't keep pointing the finger at Pogba. But of course, the lad has got to do better.
Yeah, and you look at it, you think so much more to come from Manchester United. The potential is there. We just haven't really seen it on a long-term basis.
Yeah, of course, but talk is cheap. It's well and good talking about potential. Just talking about Man United, one of the greatest clubs on the planet. They still need to do better. And certain players need to up their game. Lukaku, for example, get hold of the ball. Whatever about putting the ball in the back net, get hold of it. And if you want to become a top, one of the great strikers of Man United, and you get the chance like you did tonight, you've got to score in these tight games.
There's a lot of players at Manchester United who should probably be thanking Paul Pogba because he has become such a lightning rod for certainly Jose Mourinho's criticism and a lot of the pundits' criticism around United.
Yeah.
Where there's so many players in that team who are nowhere near the level, even, and he's still at it, running around trying hard. Alexis Sanchez has done little or nothing positive.
That's right.
Since he's arrived.
That's right, yeah. He's doing, again, given the maybe taking a bit of time to adjust to it as well. But yeah, you're right in saying it. He hasn't been. Lukaku again last night. He's scored over 20 goals, 21 goals, I think he's got this season. But not at it, I don't feel. And particularly the big games, I don't feel as though you're going to get any sort of contribution from him in most games. Yes, and you can always throw it back. Yeah, he's scoring goals and that's what his job is to do, and I take that. But hold-up play has been poor. United need to get momentum at times. When they all sat back like they're playing last night in European matches, it's essential that your striker gets hold of the ball and takes touches, and he's not been able to do that.
Been able to do that?
I think that's his weak. That's the weak side of his game. Yeah, I think at times he has done it well. I've seen him do it well in certain games, but maybe not consistently enough. No, I think that's certainly one of the things he needs to improve on consistently. I was reading Paul McGrath around the Pogba thing as well, and he's suggesting, he said, look, after what happened to Jose Mourinho at Chelsea when the players turned against him and got him out of the job, he will never allow himself to be put in that position again. He feels that something along the lines happened with him at Pogba, and he'll never let anyone at United give him the impression that they are bigger than the club. Now that's an interesting side to it, really. You think with Mourinho, with what happened to him at Chelsea, when the players clearly didn't fancy him for whatever reason it was. Something went wrong there, and now it seems to be getting to that stage here at United, doesn't it? You know, certainly the most high profile player at your football club, he's the one that you're targeting for this criticism. When, as you said, there's clearly a lot of other issues around United why they're not playing well. It's not just Paul Pogba.
That Chelsea squad that eventually became pretty disloyal and he lost the dressing room were a Chelsea squad who just enjoyed success. They were the league champions. And it seemed like a dressing room, even still, that has a lot of big personalities in there.
Yeah.
One of the arguments you might make against this United dressing room is, who are the big personalities?
Not enough.
Who are the leaders in that dressing room? Who are the big voices who would come out and, if they were going to be disruptive with Jose Mourinho? Like Pogba doesn't strike me as that guy.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's
fair. Maybe he's very
right.
Popular. Maybe if Pogba, and again, maybe this is where Mourinho, I'm sure he feels he's reading the situation right, that if he's having a pop at Pogba, that Jesse Lingard isn't getting annoyed with that, and the players that Pogba will be close to aren't getting frustrated, they can sort of remove themselves from that. But it does seem to be a risky enough business he's indulging in. If that's his aim, is to quash any dressing room revolt right at the start.
Given we know what United have paid for him, 100 million, whatever it is they've paid for Pogba, and knowing full well that United have used Pogba as part of their marketing plan over the last couple of years, he's a huge part of what United have, the brand, I suppose, the brand Man United. And yes, Jose Mourinho is hugely influential there as well.
We should remember,
but he's alienating one of the key players. Yeah,
United are still second in the Premier League, and they will go into that second leg against Sevilla a strong favourite. It is hard, though, to get away from the feeling that even with Mourinho saying in the signing of Sanchez gives them a 6 months head start on everybody, that they're again going into a summer where they have huge issues, where they may face speculation over De Gea. They're going to be looking for a centre-back, possibly two full-backs as well, another central midfielder, possibly another striker, because if Lukaku can't hold the ball up, suddenly you have Martial, 50 million quid. Rashford, one of the brightest young players in English football. Mata, 40 million quid. Alexis Sanchez, 40 million quid. You don't have somebody who can actually get the best out of all these other players you've invested massively in.
Yeah, I know. Outlay, wages, all these come into account as well. But yeah, I think that's the one thing you're looking at them last night. Even watching them, I mean, I know they're away from home, and you look at it, it's a good result for United. Even John Giles was talking about that earlier on. It is a good result on the face of it, yes. But was it a great watch? Are they a great watch, no matter where they're playing? And that's I'm talking about whether they're at home or away. They're just not a great watch, are they? They haven't been. And I think at times this season, early on, they were decent enough. But the calibre of players they were coming up against certainly weren't of the level of a Sevilla or certainly playing at Champions League level.
Maybe this is totally off, but so maybe they are the second best team in the Premier League and the league table doesn't lie, but they're not the second most likely to challenge Manchester City.
No, I think that's fair. I think you'd probably put Liverpool in that bracket, wouldn't you? I think I think Liverpool have got more of a chance with the players that they've got of winning the Champions League this season than what Man United have. I know Jose Mourinho's got the experience, and I certainly wouldn't want to rule out saying that United could win the Champions League, given the history that Mourinho has with it and how he actually won the competition in the past, by certainly with Inter Milan and Porto, very much the defensive structure right to the team. If he gets that right, yeah, there is a chance. But I feel as though that when there's a game to be won, when you need to go and seriously go on an attacker side, Liverpool are in a better position to do that. Certainly City, of course. But you're saying that in relation to City's, or to challenging City in the Premier League, I think Liverpool are probably in the best position for next season. Yeah, I do.
I haven't properly thought about this game that we're covering on Sunday, but bloody hell, it's a huge game all of a sudden. If Chelsea were to go and win this at Old Trafford, they go level on points with United. Liverpool could be ahead of Manchester United if they beat West Ham on Saturday.
You just looked at this now?
I have just looked at this
good,
now. Yeah,
good man.
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
Game's still 3 days away.
Ah, yeah.
I don't like, you know, let's keep my mind fresh for the daily events, and then I'll think about the game on Sunday morning. Now I'm very excited.
Sunday morning.
About
think about your Sunday morning.
Think about it Sunday morning. You don't want to get overcome by the emotion of these things.
I know, yeah.
You want to get a good night's sleep on Saturday night.
That was probably the problem with my career. I thought about the game too much 5 days out, and that was me dead.
You're already prepped, are you, for United Chelsea? You've got all your notes done, everything ready.
I've done United in the last couple of weeks in Chelsea.
So you're on top of it. But, and likewise, if United can go and win this, well, suddenly they're more or less assured, you would feel, of a top four spot, and Chelsea are in all sorts of trouble, and Conte is in all sorts of trouble. So, yeah, it's going to be well, I don't know if a cracker is the right word, but it'll be pretty intense.
Intense is one, yeah, probably right. It's a good shout. That's a better term, I suppose. I don't think we certainly won't see free-flowing football in the match. I can't imagine Mourinho going out and playing hoping an expansive football all of a sudden. I don't think that'll be the case, but I think it'll be a very good game to
watch. Do you think he'll bring Pogba back in?
He's probably not got no options, has he? Has he got many options in there? I mean, he could play.
Aragon.
He could play two at the base and play Matic and McTominay and bring Rashford into the side. United last night looked good when Rashford and Martial came on. Rashford able to just take a chance. United weren't taking chances last night, and I think that's the ultimate thing when you watch United. I think at times now.
What about this?
They've not
Sanchez
got players
down
that take
the middle. Rashford and Martial either side.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking about last night.
There's your sort of Drogba, Robin, Duff.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Now, physicality, maybe aerial strength, that's the one thing you're going to lose out on, of course, with Lukaku out. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that is a big possibility. That makes United look as so much more of an attractive option going forward, yeah.
We talk about McTominay as if he's some sort of pawn in this battle between Mourinho and Pogba. I'm sure he has massive aspirations for his own career, and he's playing for Manchester United in the middle of midfield in a huge Champions League game at 19. What type of player is he? Like, what is his natural his natural position, his natural role.
Well, he's a holding midfielder. He's certainly, the one thing that's been very noticeable about him early on in his career, you look at all good Man United players that come through the youth structure there, the ones that have come in, certainly from coming through the system at United, get on the ball, pass forward. You know, it's almost like you're demanding. You're going to take the ball off fullbacks. You're going to take the ball off centre halves, passing it forward. And he certainly does that. Takes chances with his passing. Yes, he will keep things simple at times. But I've been very impressed when I've seen him play. I think he takes it. I think he speeds up the game when necessary, and I think he's certainly got the energy of a box to box midfielder as well. So he looks like, yes, a complete midfielder. Is he going to be good enough to go and play 150 games for Man United? I don't know yet. Who's to say that that'll be the case? He might end up going somewhere else to continue with his career, but he's certainly impressed me up to now, yeah.
I thought you were going to say his footballing education.
Football education now, yeah.
Lots of guesses coming in for your conundrum, Kev. Is it Paul Scholes who played in all four divisions?
Did Paul Scholes play in all four?
Would he have gone out on loan a couple of times that might have allowed him to do that?
Don't know.
The one and only Teddy Sheringham says, Jimmy and Donegal. Gotta be your mate, Steve Claridge. Rob Earnshaw, who's generally the answer for all these questions.
Yeah. Good question, though, isn't it?
You see, Kev, I thought this was such a great moment in your career. You got your own thing now. On a Thursday night, was going to come in and ask his question. We'd all be excited. What is it this week? You get a huge response. People around the country are going, oh, I'm not getting out of the car just yet. I want to hear what Kev's question is. And I'll spend an hour trying to think of the answer. And maybe we'll get a prize. Maybe we'll get a sponsor over the next few weeks. Like, this is going to go big. Turns out that Kev's question is fake news. News report from the BBC 2000-2001 season. Tony Coady completed his football set on Tuesday night when he made his debut for Millwall in Tuesday's 0-0 draw at Wickham. The 35-year-old has now played in England's top four leagues in one season.
I never said one season, did I? I said one calendar year.
Oh! 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 He's got us! JP! Again, I'm just reading what's in front of me.
There you go.
I'm the producer. I don't have time to be Googling this.
Well, there you go.
Oh, so Tony Coady played in one season.
Well, I didn't know Tony Coady. I didn't know that.
Played in top four in one season. You're saying in one calendar year. Yeah, that changes everything.
Listen to the question, Nathan.
I have been listening to the question. Yeah. I didn't doubt you at all, but JP clearly constantly questioning.
Well, JP's always questioning me.
Believing the textures.
Yeah.
So your conundrum has confounded many of us tonight, but it would have been child's play for one of football's greatest minds, none other than Sol Campbell. Speaking on the brilliantly named Highbury and Heels podcast, he was asked about the rumours that he had been recently turned down for the Oxford job.
Well, I did go and they didn't accept me. Experience and things like that, blah, blah, blah. But it's like a full circle experience. How do I get experience? Yes, well, I need a job to get experience.
Exactly.
And I don't want to go too low that it's a struggle. And I don't want to go too low that I'm under someone. I'm thinking, what am I doing here? I'd rather be managing the club myself. If I'm really this low, then, God, I'm competent. You know, it's not like it's rocket science to run a football club. You know, especially when you get to that level. And if you're intelligent enough and you're a quick learner, you'll work out pretty soon, within 2-3 games, what you need or what the team needs, training-wise, to actually survive in that league, to get better in that league, to get in the playoffs, or even win the league.
Yeah.
I'm intelligent enough. I'm not like I've just played on a dog and, you know, fox and dot pitch playing football all my life. You know, it's like, I can't believe some people. I'm one of the greatest minds in football.
Yeah.
And like, I'm being wasted because of lack of experience, or maybe he talks his mind too much or whatever. I mean, go to Germany. They want people who speak their minds.
Yeah,
that's the people who got the jobs.
Yeah, they do. And that's why they produce managers like Klopp, and that's because
And then you have the balance between, you know, your expertise and you've got character, but also you can balance yourself as well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry that, you know, I've got a mind and I can talk to you, but, you know, don't be scared of that.
No.
That should be something you want at your club, but obviously not.
So that's Sol Campbell speaking on the Highbury and Heels podcast, sort of mixing the sublime with the ridiculous, because he was actually making some fairly valid points in there. He did also say, I'm one of the greatest minds in football.
Yeah, he did. And did he say he wasn't the sort of player that went and played on the fox and dog pitch? Yeah, I've never heard that term before, but yeah. I mean, yeah, fair play to him. Confidence, I think generally the point that I think what he is trying to say within, I think he probably is right. I think there are far too many young coaches that get the badges. You know, Keith Andrews will be one of them, who's obviously in our studio quite a bit, who has had a coaching role at some stage. Stephen Kelly would be another one who's now, as he said with on the Keith Andrews show, got his B and his A licence, but the opportunities are limited or aren't there for a lot of young coaches. So that's, yes, a point. Certainly management level, it's very difficult, I think, to get on that ladder, yeah.
You've spoken about this before, possibly with Ryan Giggs and some of the other great Premier League players, and the feeling that they should just automatically get a job like the Oxford job. And like Sol Campbell seems to be contradicting himself in a way, in that he's like, I don't know why they didn't accept me. Maybe it was lack of experience, which is fair enough. But also, you know, I don't want to go too low. And he's almost right, because he doesn't understand really the mindset of a lower league player. The vast majority of his career he spent at the very top. Like, he spent playing in the Premier League with Spurs and Arsenal. So how can he relate to them? Now, he does seem to think the fact he's played for England, whatever, 70 times, and for Spurs, Arsenal, Newcastle, he could go in and within two or three days, as a great football mind, he'd suddenly be aware of everything that's happening.
Yeah, well, that certainly isn't the case, is it? I think even management itself, I think it takes different characters. You just because, and again, sometimes just because you're a decent coach doesn't necessarily mean you're going to actually be a good manager at any level. But I think in general, I think we spoke about it over here so often. You look at the levels. If I'm looking over here, League of Ireland, John Caulfield, Stephen Kenny, how long they've been actually coaching, managing. I'm just picking two off the top of my head there now, but certainly John Caulfield, I know that he managed and coached certainly amateur football, working his way into the game, the progression for it. And it is difficult to make that progression and then continue to climb the ladder. But ultimately, sometimes if you actually do want to take that serious coaching job, then you might have to then go down to a level that you may feel is beneath you.
You mentioned there, Kev, Stephen Kelly was on the Keith Andrews show today at 12:30 every single Thursday. You can watch it all back on youtube.com/offtheball. Have we time to play this clip, JP? Go on, we'll play this clip. This is Stephen Kelly on with Keith Andrews a little bit earlier today.
Only go as far as you want to, because I'm sensing some sort of reluctance, and that's totally legit. But like everybody who spoke after that said, Stephen is not the sort of, this is not his character, this is not the sort of guy he is. And it's also totally legit that you can confront a management team and say, listen, I think I should be in that team, I think I should be given a chance.
Yeah, I think it was after the Germany game, like after the Euros, I was so good not to play, but it was more when we came back then. I was still playing for Fulham every week in the Premiership, and at the time not everybody was playing, like I said, not everybody was playing at that level. So, and like even now, not everybody plays at that level. So if you're playing the Premiership or Ireland, you should be in and around it. Like, I think we played Germany, I think we got an absolute hammering at home,
6-1.
There was a great quote before that game from one of the Ireland players, who there was big expectations. We were only not long in the Aviva, I think, at that point. The quote was, the new stadium hasn't had a christening in terms of a big scalp and a big performance from us. I think it's time we delivered.
Said
Keith Andrews.
That was the quote you were going to deliver.
But we were legitimately going in and saying, listen, I'm worthy of a spot in that back
four. I think we'd lost the game 6-1, and I think I had the conversations that, like, listen, I feel like I deserve an opportunity to play now. We've lost really badly at the hands of, don't get me wrong, fantastic football team, Germany, great nation, probably one of the best I've ever played against. But at home against Germany, we shouldn't be beat like that.
No.
We shouldn't be. Regardless of, you know, at the time, probably one of the best teams in the world, and they went on to win the World Cup a few years later, so they were. But I still don't think at home we should acquit ourselves in that manner.
And did they again, just be as giving as you want to be or not at all. But like, did they respond immediately negatively to that? Like, you sort of questioning the management team?
Yeah, pretty much. And it was, like I said, again, it wasn't really the manager. And it, you know, it's like trying to speak to Giovanni was difficult, because
very difficult.
His English was like dreadful, not to be around the bush. It really was.
Didn't particularly like to be questioned.
Yeah, and I think I think his English possibly maybe got worse when you spoke to him.
It's quite convenient
Yeah, you know, it's like, so sometimes, I don't understand, but he did. Yeah. So it was just, it was frustrating. But it wasn't Giovanni at all. It was just what was said.
Question your commitment.
Yeah.
That was the disappointing thing, because genuinely, I've made that point, and genuinely, from a player that played in those games in Euros, when I came back and the dust settled on everything, couldn't believe that the players that had been through it all weren't rewarded by getting a game at the Euros, and then wind on a few months, and obviously that little episode mustn't have sat.
It just didn't sit well, and that was it. And like I said, I'm not a, I never ever traumatised or paranoid type person that would yeah, even I'm not even that argumentative to the best of times, you know. I'm very relaxed and keep it probably sound like I'm very pretty chilled out person, but it was just wasn't happy with what was said and was disappointed, and that was it, I suppose. And then what happened, but like I said, there was no means was it busts up on the training ground or an argument. I think people everything gets blown out of proportion, and but no, it wasn't that in any stretch of imagination, but it was just a frustrating time. And again, it was to be honest, at the time what was said then and there was frustrating, and then I got on with it. I came back in the squad and I was
there's another 7 or 8 caps under
so I came back into it and I was fine. I was happy, I just got at it, but then it was just little things that were like things were said in the press about it, and it was just like, you know, questioning. I was just like, you know, I had to come out and make a couple of statements, I think, and all that stuff like that was just, you know, beyond frustrating, because again, to question my commitment to playing for Ireland when it's something that I've literally adored doing, and that's the God's honest truth. Like, there's been, you know, the best things in my life were probably meeting my wife Helga to begin with. We were 17, amazing, having the children, getting married, having our children, and then playing for Ireland. That's it, you know what I mean? Family always comes first, but playing for Ireland, as it comes to achievements for myself and football wise, that is by all means the best thing that I could have done. You know, I've been lucky, I've been to European Cup finals with Fulham and stuff like that, but this was being beyond the best. And so to question something like that and to question my commitment was extremely frustrating, and I had to kind of dispel those, and I think I had to dispel them, but I didn't really, because anybody that knew me, even in the media, everybody knows the type of person I am, the character I am, and that I wouldn't shy away from playing for Ireland. I would never not turn up for Ireland, you know. So I think at one point I'd gone something like 4 years without missing international, and probably only got, like, realistically, if we were to go on the amount of times I've been in the squad, I could probably have 110 caps, 115 caps, probably more, I'd say.
Could have been Kilbane, couldn't
it? Yeah, it could have been,
He could have been you.
I think one thing it does show there as well, his commitment was always there, and the difficulty at times it is to actually make the team and try to stay in it. So
the strange thing looking back on that time was that I totally forgot that the FAI seemed to have it almost in Trapattoni's contract that he wasn't allowed to speak out and criticise the players anymore. So there was when he came out and had the falling out with Stephen Kelly and made it public, the FAI had to have a word with him and say, no.
Was that right?
We spoke about this.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do this anymore.
I didn't even know.
Which seems bizarre.
Yeah, I didn't know.
That this is where we were with Trapattoni after Euro 2012.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I honestly didn't know that. Yeah, now I wasn't in the squad, obviously wasn't around at that stage when that happened. But I do remember when Stephen was questioned, and I thought it was poor, yeah.
Stephen Kelly there. So talking about that bust up with Marco Tardelli after the 6-1 defeat against Germany in 2012. You can watch the whole thing back, youtube.com/offtheball. The Keith Andrews Show is live every Thursday at 12:30 on Periscope, YouTube and facebook.com/offtheball. Richard Dunn is up next.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. It's Nathan and Kevin in studio. Arsenal 2-1 down on the night to Östersunds, but they lead now 4-1 on aggregate. So it looks as though they're on the way through to the last 16 of the Europa League. Delighted to have Richard Dunn on the line. Evening, Richard.
Good evening.
We now know what it feels like to be in the south of France because the air conditioning hasn't been working here all week, and bloody hell, it is hot. I'm sweating.
It stinks in here, honest to God.
There's I can imagine.
So we've a big day ahead on Sunday. We have Manchester United, Chelsea, and then that League Cup final, Manchester City against Arsenal. Arsenal tonight resting a few players, giving a couple of players a little bit of a run out for some match fitness ahead of that. But City, any sense that maybe their build-up will have been disrupted by what happened against Wigan and the shock of going out of the FA Cup and no longer having a chance of a quadruple?
I wouldn't have thought so. I think obviously they'd be disappointed because they had the aims of winning everything, but they've been that good this season that I think it's just a blip in the way they are. They weren't as good as they have been against Wigan the other night. They towards the end started chipping a few high balls into the box, and which wasn't really like them, but I'm sure come Sunday that'll be out of system, and they'll be looking to try and get that first trophy of the year and set them up then for the other two going towards the end of the season.
They spent big in January to bring in Laporte, who seems a very Pep Guardiola type centre-half. He's a slip of a lad, but he looks very, very comfortable when he's on the ball. Is he in a position where he's already coming in first choice as one of the two centre-halves, or how do you see that playing out between himself, Stones, Otamendi?
I think Otamendi this season he's been the first choice more through he's available for every game, and he's certainly improved this season, but he still, to me, looks a bit vulnerable. I think Laporte can, if he gets a good run of games, is certainly, there's still a space open there in the centre halves. I think as well, John Stones, probably he's not the quickest, which sort of got exposed a little bit against Wigan. So yeah, I think Laporte, he started well, and like you say, he's certainly a Pep sort of player, and the more games he gets, the more comfortable he'll become, and yeah, I think he'll be the main player for them, certainly for next season anyway, to be the main centre half.
Yeah, you mentioned the Stones maybe lacking pace. I was at the game on Monday, Rich, and even Laporte as well at times looks like he isn't the quickest. Do you see that being a problem for City when they do get to the latter stages of the big tournament, particularly Champions League, and maybe that's the one that's in my mind, I suppose, as well, when they're coming up against some sides with some extremely quick forwards?
Yeah, definitely. I think the way they play, they tend to get football in centre-halves rather than actual defending strong tacklers, strong in the air. They just want players, and that's grand when you have 75-85% of the possession, but as the tournament goes on, the Champions League, there's certainly stronger sides with strong attacking players in their teams who will cause City problems, and that is me one concern for City, is when they do get put under a lot of pressure, how strong they actually are at the back. And certainly if that was to happen to the goalkeeper, you'd be seriously concerned for their chances in that competition.
Do you then, perhaps in those latter stage games in the Champions League against the better teams, do you keep Walker and Delph or Danilo or whoever the two fullbacks are, do you keep them a little bit deeper so you have that pace so you can get back and cover for Stones and Laporte?
You would imagine so, but I don't think the manager thinks that way. I think he's confident enough to just go and feel that his sides can beat anyone, that they can, their strength is in possession of the ball, and to get that, they need the fullbacks pushing forward, they need the centre halves playing up on the halfway line, so the space is condensed for the other team. But it is a risk that I think he's willing to take. He doesn't seem to fear any team, and every game he seems to look at it like, we'll win, we'll go and win, rather than trying to hold out. Like you've seen Man United last night, they grind results out and they make themselves difficult to beat. Man City will play open football and will try and go and win games, and that's why they're great to watch. But hopefully they succeed with it, but you can see where there will be problems for it down the line.
David Silva's obviously had a lot of issues off the pitch over the last few months. He had a premature baby, which has obviously been taking up a lot of his time and a lot of his focus, which is totally understandable. But does his absence at times, and maybe Guardiola not starting him in every game at the moment, and maybe he feels he's in a position where he can start him again in the bigger games, but if it is Gundogan instead of Silva, is it a lot easier to get at Manchester City in midfield, or even to control City in midfield, if maybe you're just focusing on De Bruyne rather than both De Bruyne and Silva?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I heard someone saying recently that when Silva plays, it's almost as attacking and as we think he is, it's almost having an extra defensive player in there, because nobody can get the ball off him, and he helps City retain the ball, retain possession, retain their shape a much better. So when he's on the side, everything works better for the team. And Gundogan, he's done well. He's had trouble, I suppose, with his injuries while he's been at City, but he's not David Silva, you know. So certainly City missing him is a big miss for them. And if he can play, the more he plays, the more it gives the freedom to De Bruyne, and everyone makes the runs knowing that he's going to find them all the time. So he's a very important player for them.
Do you expect that combo to be put back in the midfield at this week? And do you think it'll be Silva and De Bruyne, because they haven't played together in a while now? I know that De Bruyne came on for Silva the other night against Wigan. Do you expect that to be the combination that he'll use, Guardiola?
I would imagine so. I think it depends on Silva and on his situation, but In for any games that City play, certainly a cup final or the big Champions League games coming up, I would imagine that is his preferred combination. Them two have been outstanding this season, and they work so well together. And the one as well, I suppose, which goes a bit unnoticed is Fernandinho, and the job that he does with them three. It's, for me, it's the best three in European football, the way they all combine and work well for each other.
Arsenal then have gone back to a back four, certainly against Spurs in the derby, with Monreal moving to left back, Bellerin playing at right back, Mustafi and Koscielny as the back two. They played back three for, well, probably almost a year under Arsene Wenger and have switched again. Was there a moment during your career when you started coming up against Arsenal where you thought, these guys defensively are no longer anywhere near the shape that they sort of became synonymous with?
Yeah, well, I played against... And Kev would have played against the team that went unbeaten for the full season, and the teams around that era where they were just so difficult to get at because of the strong defence, because of the midfield selections that they had. They were just so organised and strong. But yeah, over the last, I suppose, probably 10 years, is it now, where they've just gradually, they've tried to strengthen their attacking players, they're skillful players, but never really got it right with that centre half pairing or the goalkeeper or the just that strength in midfield. Has always been more focused on ball, retaining the ball and being nice passers, and there has been times when you can see there's gaps and there's trouble for them, and certainly on set pieces that used to be a big issue for them, and I don't think so against Man City, probably not. But yeah, they're not quite where they were back a decade ago or so. But I was seeing the semi-final of the FA Cup last year, I was at, and Man City went in front and you just expected them to go ahead and batter them. But Arsenal's performances in the big games and in the cup finals and in that semi-final last year, they've actually shown a bit of grit and a bit of courage, and they've got good results on the big stage, so yeah, they'll have lots of confidence going into the game.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably not this game where you actually think about Arsenal and worry, I suppose, is it? It is more they could actually come out this week and play the football we know they're capable of playing and beat City. That is a possibility, but it is those teams that they come up against when sides go up against them almost with that physical approach that they just can't seem to deal with that.
No, that's it, and that's been their weakness for so long. Like we say, on the final at the weekend, the Man City will play and go and try and win the game, and that leaves spaces. And Arsenal are a side who can certainly take advantage of that. But like you say, Kevin, when they come up against a strong side, like recently against Watford or teams like that, who just fight them, battle with them and get balls into the box, they struggle with it. And you don't want to say that they don't look like they're disinterested or something, but they just don't have that aggression to go and win headers and to go and make strong tackles, and they'd rather be pretty than effective, you feel, at times.
Who are the, when you look at the better teams in the Premier League, which of them then defensively have that in them, that don't mind the physical side of it, that physical battle?
I think the two at Tottenham are very good, or the three at Tottenham are very good. Throughout the league, United are a strong unit as a team more than a partnership at the back, and City have done well, but they play a different style of defending than what I would traditionally go back to, sort of thing. So certainly there's not an actual solid partnership throughout the division, I would think, where you'd say, oh, you don't fancy against them too because they're quick, they're strong, that isn't that, apart from possibly the lads at Tottenham who defend very well.
Mm. Are you getting over to the game on Sunday?
No.
Who's going to win it?
Well, City. I'd imagine City will win it. I just think they've got too much all over the team for Arsenal. Obviously, Arsenal are, like I said, they can play and they can cause trouble, but I just think it's going to be a big year for City, and I think this could be the start of it.
I don't want to worry you, Richard, but there's a weather bomb hitting Europe this week, and it's going to go all the way to the south of France, possibly freezing temperatures in the south of France, Kevin. You're going to experience... It's going to snow. Oh. It's going to snow, Richard. So you're going to get to live the life that we have to lead on a daily basis.
I'm looking forward to it. The whole place will shut down here because you won't know what to do on the
road. This is where you come to the fore then. You'll be the hero around the local. No need to panic, I'm on top of all this. Richard, great stuff. Thanks as always for taking the call.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
So Arsenal still trailing 2-1 at the Emirates to Östersunds, but they're going to go through to the next round. They lead 4-2 on aggregate. Just one other story from this evening. Richie will bring you all the full times in a while, but Athletic Bilbao taking on Spartak Moscow. 2-1 to Spartak on the night, 4-3 to Bilbao on aggregate. But there were some pretty violent scenes outside between the two sets of supporters, and a riot police officer has been killed in those riots outside. So I suspect we're going to hear a lot more about that over the coming days. That's the game between Athletic Bilbao and Spartak Moscow in Spain. You were talking about Stephen Kelly, and he mentioned he'd been in so many camps that he should probably have as many caps as you. He's 30-something.
Yeah, I just think it's such a difficult one. From 39 caps is what he got. But I look at the maybe the fullbacks he was competing with, maybe the centre-halves he was competing with as well, the defenders, I suppose. Stevie Finn and Stephen Carr, fullbacks he was coming up against. Then latterly in his career, Seamus Coleman. He just maybe hit it at the wrong time, I suppose, as well.
Centre-halves, he was always just the next best.
John O'Shea as well, who would have been around. And it was just one of those things. I know he actually did play a couple of games at left-back. It wasn't his natural position coming out that side. So it was just difficult for him, I think, to establish himself and play the games. But, it's a testament to him and his character that he was around so many squads. But he was part of some great performances over the years, you have to say that.
You have been dumped for tomorrow morning. Usually we say you're going to be on OTB AM from 7:45 AM. You could be at an airport, you could be in your house, you could be, well, God knows where you pop up on a Friday morning. But you've been dumped because Kenny Cunningham is in town and is going to be in studio.
It's a bigger draw
tomorrow morning alongside Adrian and Owen from 7:45. Former Leinster coach Matt Williams will be in as well to give you that Friday feeling on youtube.com/offtheball, Periscope, and facebook.com/offtheball.
Not going to answer the question as well.
Go on then, tell us the answer to your question.
It's relevant to tonight and who we've spoken about tonight. Yeah, but the only player, I believe, been told it's been confirmed by this character as well, or this fella, the only player to play in all four English divisions in one calendar year is Stephen Kelly.
Stephen Kelly. Had we any right answers, JP? One or two, he hasn't even checked.
Yeah, he's not even checked, no.
Here, have another one for next Thursday night, Kev. I thought that was just brilliant. Tomorrow night, we're going to be live from the Mansion House in Dublin for the latest Off the Ball Roadshow in association with Heineken Rugby Club. It's going to be a Wales-bashing Six Nations special with Brian O'Driscoll, Keith Wood, Martin Williams and Serge Betson. It is live from 7 o'clock. Tom Dunn is up next. Good night.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.